Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Financial Exchange with Mike Armstrong and Barry Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends, plus breaking business news every day. This is the Financial Exchange with Mike Armstrong and Barry Armstrong.
Real estate agents have been making a lot of money during the last couple of years. Sales are up, prices are up, and you know what? Those commissions they charge have stayed the same, right? You're paying 5, 6%. I've seen people pay as high as 7% commission.
What?
When they're selling. Yeah, they try. But it's these real estate agents and the real estate business has drawn the scrutiny of the Justice Department. Good morning, everybody. It's the second hour of the Financial Exchange with Barry and Michael here. And I'm not sure why the Justice Department is involved in this. I think the one thing that has put a lot of downward pressure on real estate commissions is Redfin.
Yeah, so we the golden standard for decades was the 6% commission. You've mentioned higher ones. I had never seen higher ones, but I'm sure they existed. There has been some pressure on that. I think the average has now come down into that 5% range. It might have even dipped a little bit lower. And there is, I mean, it has attracted a lot of people into the real estate agent career, right? We've covered how there are currently more agents than there are homes for sale. And so incredibly competitive market. You know, you point out that those commissions have grown. They most certainly have, right? I mean, they've largely been protected from price decreases that you've seen in, you know, the stock market, you know, stock brokerage of, you know, transacting for buying and selling stocks. You have not seen those types of price decreases elsewhere. I tend to agree with you that the Justice Department being involved, you know, I have some question. I don't feel that the Justice Department should have any role in setting prices of real estate commissions. That's not where they should be operating. There is enough competition there where if these realtors felt that they needed to compete on price, then they would. Where I do have some questions and where the, you know, the Justice Department is probing a little bit is asking the National Association of Realtors. They're asking to submit all documents relating to policy, guidelines, rules, or practices requiring listing brokers to make an offer of compensation to buyer brokers to list a home. And this has been a suspicion of mine for a while, which is if you work for one of those big brokerage arms, I'm not sure that you are allowed to fully let the customer determine the price. I'm not sure that your company allows you to take a listing that will not offer a commission to the buyer's broker. And that could be anti-competitive. If they are not fully disclosing what the policies are, you know, if you are, what's a big Berkshire Hathaway real estate, right? If you're Berkshire and you say that our agents who are not employees, they're contractors, are barred from taking a listing that pays a commission less than X percent. And, you know, there's some sort of collusion going on there with the National Association of Realtors. That is a problem that the Justice Department should research. If all of them are just saying, no, we're holding prices at 5% and we don't seem to have any issues there and it's full disclosure and everybody's on the same page, that's a very different story. And so I do have questions as to what's happening internally there. The Redfin example that you gave, you know, they have...
what do they charge, by the way?
On the sell side, they charge 1%. And then, you know, they still do, require you to pay a buyer's broker commission. And that buyer's broker commission, when 3%. I talked to a Redfin agent, it was... He was like, you can kind of determine where it is, but if you go less than 2.5%, I won't take the listing.
Okay. So 2.5%, you're talking about 3.5%
instead of
Redfin.
And then on the buyer side, they do something kind of weird. They accept the buyer's commission from the selling realtor, but then they rebate a bunch of it to you as right. like a credit for closing costs. So, hey, you got to pay your attorney and this stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. we'll give you a credit for those costs.
Is Redfin generally considered to be successful? Like, are they growing? Is it taking? Is it, or is it? I don't see their signs very much.
Yeah, I don't think it's taken off to the extent that I had anticipated. Right? You know, they came out there with this lower cost pricing model, and I think there is still a lot of assumption that the local realtor has more clout, more of an ability to sell that home and price it correctly, which is just surprising because we rely so heavily on technology for everything else, but assume that the local realtor just has a better view of things when it comes to this specifically. I will say I went out there and with my last home, I effectively sold it on my own. And the process to do that, right, to get the home onto MLS was very, very difficult in the language that I was allowed to use there, right? Mm-hmm. I was effectively selling that home by myself, but to get it on MLS, I could not say that I was selling it on my own. I had to have a listed agent on there that was working for me for basically a flat, like $200 fee to list mm-hmm. the thing. Yeah. And I could not advertise anywhere that it was for sale by owner.
Would you do that again?
Yes. Now that I've done it, I think that I would do it again, but I didn't know what I was doing the first time and probably screwed a few things up.
Okay.
On the buyer side, though, that's where I have the real issue. Like, so that buyer's agent that makes a 3% commission, 15 years ago, before, you know, people were using the internet readily and mm-hmm. before Redfin and Zillow existed, they had a real important job to do. It was, you know, hitting the ground, understanding what you needed and finding the list of homes for you. Today, I mean, there is a lot that I can learn about a home by looking at Zillow.
Yeah.
Like 90% of what I need to know about a home, I can learn on Zillow.
No, I disagree. You can't learn that much.
What are you missing by going and doing that home tour? How many people bought homes without ever even seeing the home in person over the last 18 months?
That may well be, but I want to walk the neighborhood. I want to drive to work from that neighborhood before I even put an offer in on that
money. And none of that requires you to have an agent.
Mm.
Right? Is anybody preventing you from driving to that home where you have the address from Zillow, walking the neighborhood and then, you know, walking around and doing the commute to your home? No, that's precisely my point is that, you know, with the advent of these technologies, the main thing you need the realtor for is to get the keys to get into that home.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, other than the, I guess I don't know. That's another question that I would have for realtors out there. If someone comes to you, approaches you, and says, I'm not working with an agent, how does that work? I've seen contracts where, I've seen it written into contracts where they say, okay, we're going to pay the seller's agent a 2.5% commission and the buyer's agent a 2.5% commission. And by the way, if somebody comes without a buyer's agent, then I'm keeping all five. So I don't know. The technology has changed things a lot. I used an agent when I bought my home. My most recent home, I used an agent. We were having a tough time with the real estate market, and this agent was really good and aggressive at finding homes that were being purchased to renovate and finding the contractors who are buying the homes that are planning on listing them. Mm-hmm. And so that was why we worked with our agent, and I thought there was a real value there. But like I said, we've seen price decreases in so many of these areas where technology has just increased transparency.
Yep.
And it has not happened in the real estate market, and that sort of baffles me.
Tucker, are you going to use Redfin are you working with Redfin on your purchase? No.
No.
Are you working with an agent in general?
Yes. Yeah, he's a friend.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Startup firm is helping home buyers win bidding wars with all cash offers. So how do you make an all cash offer if you don't have all cash?
I'd love to know that.
Yeah, me too.
So there are
company, I want the cash.
There's a company called Fly Homes that does this for you. And effectively what you do is you enter into a contract with Fly Homes and they will buy the home and then have a contract to sell the home to you at the exact same price within a certain number of days. So you effectively have a contract to buy this home from this third-party entity that will make an offer on the home that's all cash, no contingencies whatsoever. And then they're basically, they've
done...
You've
got to add to your cost, though.
Yes, absolutely. So one, they almost certainly keep the seller's commission, or the buyer's commission, excuse me. So, you know, they become the agent that you're working with in this case. Separately, they also... You know, it sounds like depending on the company that you're working with, they charge commissions, fees, you know, perhaps both in some cases. You know, it can be a flat fee of between 1% and 3% of the purchase price. So that's how this works. And it, of course, this exists. I just hadn't even considered this. But yeah, these companies will go out there and just make your offer look far better than everybody else's, right? A 1.5, this is the example here, it was in California. This is a $1.5 million home purchase, and Fly Homes made an all-cash offer on their behalf. And then just said, okay, 60 days from now, you'll be able to get your mortgage, and you'll buy it from us at the exact same price, and we're going to make a little 3% spread on $1.5 million. I don't know the exact amount that they did in this case, but not a crazy business model unless a...
Depends on what your costs are. Like, I'd love to know what my added costs are associated with that purchase.
Yeah, I mean, if it's 1% to 3%... And you've already made 10 offers on homes and gotten them rejected.
Right.
Doesn't seem all that crazy. I think from Fly Home's perspective, though, you're carrying a lot of risk there, right? Sure. I mean, if the contract that you have with that person, they lose their job in that 60-day window and can no longer get the mortgage, and then the real estate market falls apart, you're left holding a whole bunch of homes without buyers all of a sudden.
Gotcha. All right, up next, Charlie Gasparino from the Fox Business Network will explain to us why we've had all this volatility. By the way, stocks are in positive territory now. They were in positive territory, then they're in negative territory. Now they're back in positive territory. Charlie will tell us why when we return.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Today, we are joined by Dan Stack, the CEO of Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Dan, can you tell us when the DAV got started and what the overall mission is?
The DAV is about fulfilling the promises to the men and women who served. Since the inception of the DAV back in 1920, we have worked diligently to procure benefits for disabled veterans and their families, as well as assist with transportation and employment opportunities, all at no cost to the veteran.
No cost at all to the veteran at all. That's amazing.
It really is. Our mission is to provide free professional assistance to veterans and their families in obtaining benefits and services earned through their military service, which are provided by the Department of Veterans Affairs and other agencies of the government.
Well, we thank you for joining us, Dan.
For more information on how you can support the Disabled American Veterans of Massachusetts or register for this year's DAV 5K, visit DAV5K.Boston.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Book your flight to Nantucket today with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off Route 128. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. This week in American history, what often forgotten president was sworn in following the assassination of President James Garfield? If you know the answer to that question, text it to us at 63566. That's your first and last name and the keyword iFly to 63566. The eighth correct answer will win a $50 gas card and be automatically registered to win a pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give the tickets away during Friday's program. The question again, if you missed it, this week in American history, what often forgotten American president was sworn in following the assassination of President James Garfield? You know, you history buffs will know the answer. Mike, if we don't have Charlie, let's talk about child care. You and Tucker know a little bit about child care these days.
I do, and the headline from the New York Times is, "Can't Compete, Why Hiring for Child Care is a Huge Struggle." This is only one of the dozens of articles I've read about difficulty hiring for different low-wage industries, and the answer is because it is a low-wage industry that doesn't pay enough. I really don't think it's all that complicated.
But then from parents, I hear that the costs are prohibitive.
Yeah, absolutely is.
What does it cost to have, if you say you're a working couple, and you're both, you know, cops, firefighters, whatever, and you have to drop that kid off, and that kid's got to be in daycare 8 to 10 hours a day. What's the cost Monday through Friday?
So for an infant to send an infant to the child care center that my kids use currently, which is here in Needham, given that it's in Needham, it's probably more expensive than the average across the state. But that's $126 a day for an infant, 10 hours a day.
Wow.
7:30 to 5:30. That's what you're looking at, is $126 a day. So basically $12.50 an hour is what you're looking at for an infant. It does go down for older kids because they don't need as many teachers in that classroom. But I think Tucker, do you know what's the required student to teacher ratio for an infant? I think it's 1 to 3 or something along
that
those
I don't
lines.
Know.
It's very high. It's higher, Michael, in Massachusetts because we had a few daycare incidents where kids died. Due to a lack of the theory was a lack of attention, so the laws changed. And the challenge is, you're talking about what, $600 a week to have your kid in daycare?
Yeah.
And so how much? And you can't deduct it, right? So in order to do that, you're basically talking about, you got to make $1,000 by the time you pay all your taxes and everything. To send your first $1,000 a week you make. So if you're not making a lot of money, if you're making $200,000, you do it, right? But what if you're making $80,000?
Yeah.
You're not going to spend that. You're not going to spend, $50 to send your kid to daycare.
Yeah. And so, I mean, even at these rates, I looked at the job openings on Indeed this morning, and there is a job for Bright Horizons, one of the country's largest daycare providers out there.
Sure.
It's in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is, a high wage area. It's paying $16 to $17 an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, you can offer a slightly lower wage for a job that entails working with infants because, frankly, I know a lot of people that really would enjoy that job. And, the same goes, we see it with teachers, right? I mean, there are teachers that accept a lower wage because they are willing to do it. But when you've got Amazon at their, their center, I don't know where the closest one is to Cambridge, but I think they're starting at $20 or $25 an hour to work at an Amazon center. It's just not going to make the math work unless you really, if you A, have the financial means to take a lower paying job, and B, really, really enjoy the work. And while it can be enjoyable, it's not easy work, right? I mean, changing diapers and, caring for infants, making sure they don't get into any sort of disaster is not easy work.
Nope,
let's not paint it for something that it's not. So the child care situation, to me, is the same story as all the other low-wage workers in this economy right now, which is, prices are going to go up, and in places like Massachusetts, where it's already incredibly unaffordable to, to send your kids to childcare, it's going to be very, very difficult.
It just exacerbates the labor problem, though, because what happens is the RN who's making $80,000 a year says, "Well, I'll just stay home. I'll quit. Right? I'll quit my job at Mass General, and I'll just stay home and raise my kid."
Yeah, if it's going to cost you $30,000 a year to send a kid to childcare, you probably will.
Well, and it's not really, you can't say it's 30 because how much do you have to make? right, to pay the 30.
Right.
That's what people forget. Oh, it's 30 grand. No. There's no tax deduction for childcare, right? You don't get to do the whatever you're paying in daycare. You're not writing that off. So and I suspect that also has something to do with our birth rate, right? You look at the cost of raising a family. You might have a young couple that says, oh, we want to have kids, but gee, we can't afford the daycare.
Yeah, absolutely. So. It definitely. Yeah, I do know people who are not having their second child because of the cost of raising the first one. So
I'm sure.
That definitely plays in. And like I said, you know, I'm looking at the Needham costs. I'm sure that you can send an infant to daycare for 20 grand and maybe it's not 10 hours a day. Maybe it's a shorter day. But, you know, how many people have a job that allows them to, you know, drop a kid off for 4 hours a day of daycare? It's not all that feasible in a lot of cases.
Well, you talk about the daycare industry having difficulty attracting talent. The restaurant industry is going through the same thing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, all these wages that we have talked about over and over again, you know, the tipped employee wage starting at $2.13 an hour, you know, all of these things are heading up. I do wonder if there are, if you're going to get to a point with some of these restaurants where, you know, we talked about a few of them getting away from tipping and just saying, okay, we're just going to pay a wage and it's going to include tip. I haven't seen that get announced anywhere and I haven't seen it be a big part of it. And I know a lot of the servers, you know, enjoy that tip. But when I think about like an Applebee's or a Cheesecake Factory and hiring those servers, if that model might make more sense as they continue to automate and digitize everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be whether they can survive or not. Some restaurants I've seen put in 20% or 18% gratuity without your consent, right? The customer just pay, you know, there's an 18% gratuity built into the bill. I'm not sure how servers feel about it, but it's probably better than what they usually receive in gratuities. Coming up, we'll have the answer to our trivia question.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
Chester Arthur was sworn in as the 21st U.S. president on the morning of September 20th, 1881, which was the day after President Garfield passed away. Garfield had been shot more than 2 months earlier, and he is the shortest serving president, having only been elected 6 months prior to his death.
And Brian from Holyoke is our winner today. He's taking home a $50 gas card. Congratulations, Brian. You're also registered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We're giving those away this Friday, so tune in. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. You can book your flights to Nantucket today with a brand-new schedule from Hanscom Field. You can take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off Route 128. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
All right. I thought you had Charlie.
No, not yet.
Nope. Okay.
Sorry.
Those of you who have been waiting for things to be delivered, I have found them. If you're missing your dishwasher, if you can't find a refrigerator, if you can't find a sofa, if you can't find electronics and TVs and all the things, all you things you hear about the supply chain being broken, don't worry. I know where they are. They're sitting off the coast of California, and they're going to be there for a while.
They are. There's on Sunday, we reached a record 73 ships waiting to offload. According to the Marine Exchange of Southern California, that's double the number from just a month ago. And prior to the pandemic, it was rare to have more than one ship waiting to, you know, to unload their cargo. This was pretty well down to a science. We've covered this before, but the scale at this point, 73 cargo ships sitting out in a bay is
why?
Just absolutely. Why are they sitting there?
Yeah. Why can't they process them?
A number of different factors. One, just labor shortages across the country, right? These jobs are not extremely high-paying jobs to unload these cargo ships. Two, we are importing way more stuff this year and last year than we did prior to the pandemic. So the volumes are way, way up. And then three, once they are unloaded, we are having a tough time finding the truck drivers to start moving these containers to other parts of the country. And so those three factors combined, plus just, you know, all sorts of disruptions elsewhere across the globe, are making it so that we just cannot process these volumes whatsoever. Earlier in the pandemic, the secret was, okay, we're going to go the long route. We're going to go through the Panama Canal and drop these things in Jersey because California is so backed up. Now the ports on the East Coast are just as ugly as those on the West Coast, and you're facing the same dilemmas really across the country. So,
Sounds like a wage problem, though. I mean, and you think of the workers on, and they're pretty well paid, Mike. You the port workers?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad paying job. A truck driver, a long haul trucker these days, the average wage for that job is paying $64,000 a year.
Evidently, that's not enough.
Even so, yeah, it's apparently not enough to attract enough people to do the job. And so, wages need to go up. But I think, quite frankly, the overall supply chain disruption, you've got just boats that, you've got ports that are shutting down or shut down earlier during COVID, and so they couldn't process the same volumes. Now, the people that are working there are back, but you still have, much higher spending on goods compared to services than you did prior to the pandemic. And so now,
you know what this is screaming, don't you? What? Absolutely screaming at the top of its lungs. Immigration reform. These are jobs that immigrants can do. Immigrants can come in and they can drive trucks. Immigrants can come in and they can work in the ports. The challenge is politically, it has to get worse before that becomes a tenable factor, right? Before you get politicians on both sides of the aisle saying, hey, we need to loosen up and let these undocumented workers become documented so we can have them work. Because these worker shortages are not going to be abated through birth, right? The birth rate keeps declining. We need immigrants.
Yeah, or you're going to see severe additional automation, right? I mean, this type of issue is going to make the self-driving truck come to market much faster than it would have otherwise, and a lot of those jobs that they just can't fill for whatever reason, are going to go by the wayside over the next decade would be my expectation. You won't see it hit port workers and truck drivers nearly as quickly as you will fast food workers, but nonetheless, I think that one of those two solutions is happening. Now, here with the port workers, I mean, I do suspect that this is still a temporary bottleneck, but nonetheless. We're joined now by Charlie Gasparino from Fox Business to discuss markets. And, we've been whipsawed a little bit today, Charlie, but you saw the panic in markets yesterday. I think at 3 p.m. we were down 900 points on the Dow before it rebounded a little bit. How much of this is still continued to be dominated by the China, the Evergrande story?
I think it is that, but I don't think that's. I mean, listen, headlines like that should not affect the U.S. markets. I mean, I don't think U.S. banks are particularly tied to Chinese real estate.
No.
The trade war that we had during the Trump years allowed us to sort of diversify, the U.S. companies to diversify their supply chain stuff, right? So we're not totally all the time depending on China if it has some sort of an economic, implosion, which this could be. I mean, if you look at, I've been reading a lot, particularly some really smart fintech bloggers talk about how this, this is a sort of contagion that,
yep,
that the Chinese government instituted because of this sort of mismatch that was going on in their economy. It was basically essentially real estate, and was sopping up all the much of the capital, too much of the capital at the expense of tech and other sort of innovative industries, and they put a by cracking down on leverage and things like that, they basically exposed one of the biggest players in the real estate market, and it's going to be a slow slow process of unwinding the leverage that this company had, and it's unclear if the company is going to make it. That's one of the problems with a command and control economy is China. I mean, the market forces won't step in until it's way too late. And it kind of reminds me of where we are in certain respects, because if you remember 2008, because of a belief that the Fed would step in and, you know, basically fix the system, the leverage in the real estate market and what the banks were willing to do, you know, just kept going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because there was this sort of moral hazard that was created. And the same thing, you've seen this, maybe even bigger with the Chinese government. And so they're going to have to unwind these real estate things that are highly leveraged, and it's going to be painful for them. But that's not our problem, I don't think, in a way. And I'm not saying we're totally divorced from it. I just don't see that as being the problem. The problem that we have is we got massive taxes coming. We have a slowdown in earnings coming, unless Joe Manchin holds his ground, which he's known not to ever do on the tax part. We have a slowdown. Corporate earnings are slowing down. You could see that in some of the data. You know, we have these sort of structural. We have the Fed that's literally created bubbles that are insane. I mean, meme stocks. I mean, these were penny stocks. Now they're trading at some huge level. So we got a lot of bubble stuff here. Plus we have an economy that's facing a massive fiscal tightening. So you got all that, and if we have inflation, then the Fed has to tighten. You know, those are the problems I think that are being reflected in this market now, and that's why it's all over the place.
So
that's why it was down yesterday. The Chinese thing is just getting people, is just getting the herd to reexamine our fundamentals, and a lot of our fundamentals aren't that great.
So let's talk about, you know, I agree with some of those long term concerns. You know, Fed action promoting risk taking, and tax policies. We have no idea where that's going to land at this stage, but it looks like
it might be positive if they kill it. Right?
So yeah, we don't know where that'll land, but you know, it looks like they're going to be going up and to some degree. I guess the question is, to what degree is that? We've got the Fed meeting this week, and you know, widely expected to continue that conversation leading towards tapering. Do you suspect that anything going on in China has the Fed reexamining their decision-making process?
I'm sure they're looking at China, right? Yeah. I mean, they would be idiotic not to. It's a global economy. I just think the problem is that, what the Fed has to worry about with inflation is that if there is real inflation and they're behind the curve in it, it's hard to tamp down without massive amounts, without really slowing down the economy.
Yep.
So I think if, he knows that he's playing with fire. So I don't think they're going to start, raising rates dramatically anytime soon, but I don't think they're going to move off their taper schedule.
So
I don't think he can, unless he's got really good evidence that that inflation is transitory, that it's done.
So let's talk about the political side of it instead then. You accurately point out that I think you've got, tax increases coming. It doesn't look like they're going to be nearly as severe as what Joe Biden ran on. You know, the tax policy that I looked at in November of last year compared to what's coming out of Congress right now look pretty vastly different. But one thing that I've just, continued to think to myself throughout all of this is there's no way the Democrats are going to tax more than they spend, right? If there's one thing that I'm pretty sure about, they're going to spend a lot more than they end up pulling in new tax revenue. Isn't there one big lesson from government spending over the last 18 months that it adds to stock valuations?
Is that the takeaway from government spending? I mean, listen, it does in the short term, clearly. Long term could create inflation, which often leads to, monetary tightening, I'm sorry.
Yep.
And at some point, you got to pay for it. And even the Democrats, the Democrats are interesting in the sense that tax increases are almost ideological with them.
Yes.
If they really believed in the modern monetary theory, right, that you can just print your way out of anything, why would they need to raise taxes?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm with you. No, it's right? To them, it's a fairness issue. It's not. It's almost a moral issue than it is.
So it's a moral issue,
economic
to them.
One.
So they, if they really believed that, like Bernie Sanders says he does, in the MMT and some of these other liberals, progressives, they wouldn't be raising taxes. But they feel like they almost have to you know, to appease their base. And I think that's the problem with the party. I mean, you can't do something. They can't do anything without raising taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they'll lose their base. You know what I'm saying? And Biden feels that, you know, I mean, listen, as much as the Republican Party splintered, the Democratic Party splintered.
Yep.
I mean, you know, most Democrats are moderate liberals, but they're not these loony lefties. But the loony lefties, it's kind of the tail wagging the dog. You know, they get all, they suck up all the air on social media, and you know, AOC generates is a publicity machine, and so is Bernie Sanders. So they kind of got to give them something, and so Biden has to give them a tax increase, and that's not going to be good for the markets.
Yeah,
now we'll see. Maybe Manchin holds. I don't know.
Well, we will see. I made this point earlier that they are certainly the loudest in the room. We'll see if they are also the most influential. Charlie Gasparino from Fox Business joining us to talk about everything impacting the markets this week and seemingly all this month. Charlie, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. And look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Mark Schaefer from the Armstrong Advisory Group joining us for Financial Planning Tuesday. Stay tuned right here on the Financial Exchange.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
The fastest, easiest way to get to Nantucket is on Southern Airways Express. Fly from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now a brand new route from Hanscom Field. It's a great time to plan a day trip or a weekend on the island without the hassles and high fares of flying from Boston. Southern Airways Express will provide you a first-class experience that is sure to make you a frequent island hopper. Take off for Nantucket today from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and their brand new route from Hanscom Field. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
It couldn't be more important to have a detailed plan in place to help you navigate through retirement and avoid some of the financial pitfalls folks often encounter once they stop working. Call the Armstrong Advisory Group and ask for their new free guide, Developing a Retirement Plan. Call 800-393-4001 and get your copy today. That's 800-393-4001. Or download it right now at armstrongadvisory.com. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated. We're finally back together, and now it's time to finish in the fort. The DAV 5K is Saturday, November 6th, and there are still bibs available. To register for this year's DAV 5K and support the Disabled American Veterans of Massachusetts, visit DAV5K.Boston. That's DAV5K.Boston. The DAV 5K is proudly presented by Encore Boston Harbor.
Joined now by Mark Schaefer from the Armstrong Advisory Group. And Mark, pretty rough day yesterday. Mark's been whipsawing a little bit today. We started out the day about where we are. Things went negative for a few minutes before popping positive again. I know that you know, times like this, we start getting the questions. Should I liquidate? Should I go to cash? Is this the big one? Is this the one that's going to, you know, knock things down, you know, like we saw back in March of last year? We've talked about this market correct, you know, this brief market correction that we saw yesterday, but how do we answer that question, right? You know, how do you look at that question of should I be in this investment portfolio that I currently have?
Well, thanks for having me, Mike, and that's correct. I am getting calls. Got two yesterday, three today, and it's usually the same answer. You know, we got to think longer term. I mean, you mentioned last March. So the short answer is yes. If your long-term strategy says, hey, I should have this type of allocation, you know, how much I have in stocks, what type of stocks, large companies, small companies, whatever that mix is that you've designed for yourself with your financial advisor, hey, this is my long-term strategy, in, you know, over 20, 30 years maybe, even multi-generational. These are long, financial planners think long-term. And when you put together these portfolios, when you have a short-term market move like this, hey, it's been, what, a week, 2 weeks? You know, when was the last time we were at all-time highs? I don't know, 2 weeks ago maybe?
Yeah.
So when you have these short-term moves, again, I try to talk to my clients about the remembering why we are in this portfolio. It's because I need to generate income for the rest of my life. It's because my daughter has special needs, and I want to make sure there's a bunch left for her 20 years from now after I'm gone.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean do nothing, depending on what your portfolio is and what type of your investor you are. I mean, I would think that if you're all invested in, you know, primarily emerging market debt, you might need to be making some decisions over the next few days. But I guess that comes down to the age-old question of diversification.
That's 100% correct. Yeah, we like buying things on sale, right? So absolutely, these create opportunities, actually, rather than, you know, fear. You know, don't be fearful of moves like this. It's actually healthy, right? Only down, what, 5% from its all-time high?
Yep.
Corrections are what? Less now. So corrections are what, 10%? They happen on average once every 3 years. They're healthy, right? Let's do some rebalancing and let's, you know, buy things on sale.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But the short answer is no, don't make major market moves. Because the calls I'm getting are, hey, should I go to cash?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, right? Because true diversification, you use that word, means that you have non-correlated assets. If you have a truly diversified portfolio, then you have a number of holdings that actually potentially went up over the last 2 weeks, right? Right. You have commodities, you have real estate, you have bonds. They're non-correlated with the stock market. So true diversification smooths out the risk, helps you stay in the market so you don't freak out and want to go to cash, and think longer term is really what I'm trying to say, you know, high level here.
Mark Schaefer from the Armstrong Advisory Group joining us today to talk about portfolios and the brief market dip that we saw yesterday. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You know, the lesson to be learned when you get those corrections, though, is, you know, even though you might have your asset allocation, make sure you have your rainy day fund, right? Make sure that, you know, if stocks went down and they stayed down for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, that you're not going to be having to change your lifestyle as a consequence.
Tell you what, though, last two decades, if they've taught me anything, that age-old question of diversification hasn't worked with emerging markets. Emerging markets are down since 2007.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, but they when they're up, you know, they can be up 50%.
They are, but it's been 14 years.
It's been a while. Dow is up right now 153 points. The S&P is up 19 points. And the NASDAQ is up 98 points. Still got about 4 hours of trading to go. We will see you tomorrow right here on the Financial Exchange.